Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. There is a lot of bad parenting going on in America, and these low-performing parents are not doing their kids any favors. That's why in America we have a high percentage of children that are depressed, anxious, and medicated compared to other developed countries. The kids are also lagging behind academically, and they're not being given the foundation to becoming well-adjusted adults as they age. That's all according to our guest, and it's all mommy and daddy's fault. Dr. Leonard Sachs is the author of the book, The Collapse of Parenting, How We Hurt Our Kids When We Treat Them Like Grownups. Dr. Sachs, welcome to The Source.
Thanks for inviting me.
Our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. If you want to discuss bad parents, give us a call. Send emails and comments to thesource@tpr.org. And let me ask you, Dr. Sachs, you say parents have abdicated their dominant role, and that is the big problem.
Well, I don't really agree with that way of putting things, and I certainly don't agree with your statement that it's all mommy and daddy's fault. On the contrary, the opening chapter is titled The Culture of Disrespect. And the point I make in that opening chapter is, look, a parent could have all the right intentions. And I hear from so many parents who say, look, we try to teach our child to be respectful. We model respectful behavior. And yet he is disrespectful. Where is this coming from? It's not the parent's fault. It's because this child's being raised in the United States in 2016, where the dominant culture for kids who speak English at home is a culture of disrespect, the culture of Justin Bieber, Miley Cyrus, Akon, Eminem. And so you have good parents with all the right intentions who are getting bad outcomes. And helping those parents is really a major focus of the book.
But you have parents who will buy the T-shirt that will say something like, it's not that I'm not listening, it's just that I hate you, you know, and who buys the T-shirt for the kid who wears that?
Well, sure, and many parents don't understand that when you buy a T-shirt like that for your child, you are nurturing that culture of disrespect, and you don't want to do that. So again, that's one of the points I'm trying to make, is to be on your guard, realize that American culture now undermines children. This wasn't true 30 years ago. I'm not saying 30 years ago were the good old days, but researchers look at immigrant children and compare them to kids born and raised in this country. And a child who's just arrived here from India or Pakistan or Korea is now much less likely to be anxious or depressed, much less likely to be disengaged from school, compared to an American kid. Kid born and raised in this country. That wasn't true 30 years ago. In fact, 30 or 50 years ago, the opposite was true. 30 or 50 years ago, kids were better off being born and raised in the United States than being immigrant kids. But today, that's not true. Scholars call that the immigrant paradox. And again, it reflects the fact that it's not just or solely parents who are to blame here. It's the fact that American culture has become toxic to children.
Well, we do have television programs, which you point out in your chapter as well. We talk about the culture of disrespect, you know, Dog with a Blog or even Modern Family. It sort of revolves around how the parents are doofuses and don't really have a clue, and the children
Absolutely. Again, the culture of disrespect is very much on television. Disney Channel is among the worst offenders, as you pointed out. Shows like Dog with a Blog and Liv and Maddie portray parents as idiots, clueless, out-of-touch morons. And a lot of parents don't realize this because they may not be watching Disney Channel. They assume that if it's Disney Channel, it's family-friendly. And that assumption is not correct.
Our phone lines are open if you want to join our conversation as we talk about the trajectory of parenting in America today. The number is 210-614-8980. Monica has called in. Hi, Monica. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Doing good. You're on the air.
Well, I have an issue with this whole thing because people can only do as well as from what they know. And in the 70s, you have Dr. Spock. And in the 80s, you tell us to put our children to sleep on their side, you know, on their back. No, breastfeed the children. Don't breastfeed the children. I think it's a little bit ridiculous because if a whole village to raise play the child. Now, the disrespect, if we have really ridiculous things going on in our country, like not any political, but political things, Donald Trump running for president, Texas not, you know, taking slavery's importance out of the textbook, maybe the parents are buffoons, and we have to realize that they can only do the best that they can do with what they have.
Okay, Monica, thank you for the
call. Society is responsible.
Okay, appreciate it. So, Dr. Sachs, the parents can only do as well as they know. They've been getting conflicting information from different sources, and that it's society's fault.
Well, I don't really play the blame game, and worrying about who's to blame here is really not going to get us very far. I think it's more useful to share strategies for what works and share stories of parents who've been very successful living here in the United States. You know, to no screens at the dinner table, connect with your child, prioritize the family. There's so many families now where mom, dad, son, and daughter come home, and within a few minutes, they're all looking at a different screen, often in a different room of the house. When your child comes home, don't allow her to go to her bedroom. Encourage her or require her to stay in the kitchen with you. You may not be working on the same stuff, but a family can't be a family if you're not spending any time together.
Right, without trying to assign blame, but we are trying to figure out who is responsible. Maybe we can figure out where to go with that. And if parents are wanting to be the buddy, the friend of the child, then that makes it, doesn't it make it hard to be the parent?
Well, it's a good point. We do get tangled up in the words sometimes because every parent, every good parent, I think, wants to be friendly with their child. Every good parent wants to be the trusted advisor and confidant of the child, and there's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes you'll find parents who feel it's their job to be their child's best friend, and that's a big mistake because a friend cannot give orders to her friend. A friend cannot command a friend to turn off the device and go to bed. A friend cannot command a friend that you are not allowed to watch violent pornography. A friend cannot command a friend that you're not allowed to pig out on ice cream right before supper. But a parent must say those things, and only a parent can say those things. And as a practicing physician, I have seen that the parents who are trying to be the best friend very typically succeed not in being the best friend, nor in being a good parent. They end up being viewed as a child just as a kind of pathetic provider of stuff.
Right. So they depend on the parent to take them to the mall, but they don't want to get the parent's opinion about what they do with their lives. We're talking about the collapse of parenting and how we hurt our kids when we treat them like grown-ups. We invite you into our conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. Dr. Leonard Sachs is the author, and he is an expert in this area. He's also been talking about gender roles and how important they are in identifying them in kids and allowing them to grow up appropriately and develop a strong mooring and become well-adjusted adults. We're going to continue our conversation when we come back from this break. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. What mistakes do parents make? American children are falling behind in academics. They're anxious, depressed, overweight, less happy than other kids in the developed world. Is it because parents aren't parenting? They're trying to be friends with their kids. How can you fix that? We're speaking with Dr. Sachs. He's written the book, The Collapse of Parenting, How We Hurt Our Kids When We Treat Them Like Grown-Ups. You're invited into the conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. 980, and Linda is on the line. Hi, Linda. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. While I agree that kids definitely seem more disrespectful now than, you know, in decades past, I've noticed a lot of really good things about this next generation of kids coming here. I mean, just like when I go up and I meet my kids' friends or I've gone up to the high school for various things, these generation of kids, they seem more open to be inclusive. They don't mind, race differences or sexuality differences don't seem to bother them. They just seem more willing to embrace differences among each other. And so I kind of think maybe just, you know, there's a cultural shift. Maybe what this next what the culture needs in the future is maybe authority isn't as important. Maybe, you know, we're changing into something else society-wise.
All right, Linda, great observation. Thank you for calling that in. So, Dr. Sachs, I think you've noticed also that as we've had this equal rights movement and with the gender and race, that people feel like authoritarianism is a bad thing, and that's why maybe we've lost some of this parenting edge.
Well, I think that's a very good point. I think many people are uncomfortable with the concept of authority, but I'm not suggesting that the generation of 30 years ago were the good old days and today everything is bad. On the contrary, I agree completely with the caller that certainly we want to endorse equal rights and welcome people. That's really not relevant to the point I'm making in the book, though. The point I'm making in the book is that in many domains, parents don't understand their role. For example, is it okay for a child to go to bed with a mobile phone? Many parents are so unsure of their authority that they leave that decision to their child, to their 14-year-old. That's not a decision that should be put in the hands of a 14-year-old. What is she supposed to say when her friend tomorrow at school says, hey, I texted you last night at midnight, how come you didn't answer? Many kids are going to bed with their mobile phone at 2 in the morning. She's getting a text message from her friend, oh, my goodness, Jason and Sonia broke up. This is really big news. And she's up for an hour in the middle of the night exchanging text messages. If you let 14-year-olds take a cell phone to bed, that is what happens. And the parent has to take the phone at 9 o'clock at night, turn it off, put it in the charger, stays in the parent's bedroom. You have to do this because, as I said, when that girl's asked tomorrow morning in school why she didn't respond to the text message, it's not reasonable to expect her to say something like, well, researchers have found that sleep deprivation increases the risk of depression in adolescents. Come on, 14-year-olds don't talk that way. You have to allow her to say, hey, my evil parents take my phone every night at 9. They won't let me have it back to the next morning. So every era is different, and one of the challenges in this era is that we've got all this technology, and a lot of parents are bringing to their parenting a kind of 1980s sensibility about, you know, letting kids decide, which really doesn't fit the 2016 situation.
So sleep deprivation, you mentioned that briefly, and I just want to talk about how significant that is, especially to the adolescent brain. You know, we see that kids that don't get enough sleep, there's so many distractions in their bedroom these days with mobile phones and the internet and a whole bit. They crunch down on sleep and they don't get enough of it, and that could add to other symptoms and behaviors that we might think would require medication.
Yeah, and sometimes parents don't see the link between the collapse of parenting and the rise in the diagnosis of ADHD, but I've seen it firsthand many times. So this boy did okay in elementary school and middle school, but now in high school he's not doing so well. And he tells his parents he's having trouble concentrating and focusing, and they take him to the child psychiatrist, who says, well, let's try Adderall or Vyvanse and see if it helps. And sure enough, after the first week on Adderall, the teacher is calling home and saying, oh, my goodness, what a difference. He's doing so much better. Wow, the medication's really helped. And the child, the teacher, the parent, and the prescribing physician all think, well, this medication was prescribed for ADD, and it's obviously helped immensely, so he must have ADD. But they are mistaken. These parents brought their son to me for a second opinion because they were concerned about side effects. And I did a careful sleep history, which the first physician had not done. The first physician asked, when does he go to bed? And the parent said, well, he's in his bedroom at 9, doesn't come out to the next morning at 6. But what is happening in the bedroom? And this kid has a video game console in his bedroom, and it turns out he was staying up till 2 in the morning playing video games night after night after night. Sleep deprivation will cause you to have trouble concentrating and focusing and paying attention. It's indistinguishable from ADHD of the inattentive variety. But the appropriate remedy for sleep deprivation is sleep. Adderall and Vyvanse are going to be immensely helpful for this kid in the short term, at least, because what are they? They're amphetamines. These medications are amphetamines. They're very powerful stimulants. They'll compensate for the sleep deprivation, but a kid who is sleep deprived needs parents who will turn off the devices and let him get some sleep. He should not be on amphetamines to compensate for his sleep deprivation.
Back to the phone lines with L.A. L.A., hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. When my wife and I were raising our two children, my wife would fix a meal, and they would have to eat what was put in front of them. My children turned out all right. My daughter's a microbiologist. My son is a professor in college. My daughter has two children, and what she does is prepare three meals, one for she and her husband, one for her daughter, and one for her son. I don't think that's right. Do you have any ideas about what she can do to improve that?
Yeah.
All right, L.A., thanks for the call.
Yeah, that's become a real common story in the United States. I was talking to some parents in Chappaqua, New York, and they made a healthy and nutritious supper for their son and daughter. And the son or daughter came home and said, "Ooh, yuck, we don't want to eat that. Can we just order pizza?" And dad said, okay, and he sat down at the computer and ordered Domino's pizza online to the specifications that the kids provided. And I asked him, why'd you do that? And he said, well, I don't believe in using starvation as a means of discipline. I said, look, they're not going to starve. If they're hungry, they will eat it. Look, 30 years ago, if mom made a healthy and nutritious supper, as we just heard, and the kids came home and didn't like it, she didn't go out to buy pizza for them. She would say, this is what's for supper. If you don't like it, you can go to bed hungry.
But the foundation of this is that there's too many choices, there's too much negotiation going on, and that the parents, set the rules, and this is what you live by.
I don't know that I would say there's too many choices. I would say the choices are in the wrong domain. The question of what's for supper is not a question that should be put to an 8-year-old or a 12-year-old, because many 8-year-olds and 12-year-olds will choose pizza and french fries. That's why they have parents. But when parents abdicate that responsibility, so many American parents have, you see there's been a quadrupling in the rate of obesity over the last 40 years. Now, there's several factors driving that. One is the fact that many parents now let kids decide what's for supper. And in the book, I share the research showing that disrespectful children are at least 3 times more likely to become obese compared to respectful children. In addition, kids are less active than they used to be. Kids today are more likely to be looking at a screen when they get home instead of playing outdoors. These are parameters that parents can control and should control. But if parents feel like the kids should decide how they're going to spend every moment of their free time and what's for supper, one result is you get a lot more fat kids.
Amy's on the line. Amy, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hey.
Thanks for having me. My question is, I have 5 children ranging from 9 years old to just turned 18. The 18-year-old is a senior in high school. My question is, my husband and I have always been extremely clear on what the boundaries are. You know, we go over and we rediscuss behind closed doors. You know, are we handling this right? Should we revisit this? But it's been very, very clear what our limits are. I'm in complete agreement with everything that's being said as far as, you know, there has to be clear roles. Someone's the parent and someone's the child, and that's the end of it. Having said that, at what point do we start kind of allowing more of the decision processes being made by the 18-year-old? I mean, he's going to be headed off to college. I can't be walking in there and having to,
Okay, Amy, we got a broken line there, so I'm going to let Dr. Sachs answer the question.
Okay, sure. And, of course, kids are going to grow up and move away as they should. That's part of the game. And sometimes parents will say, look, in a couple years, my kid's going to be going away to college, so what's the point of trying to impose these rules and saying that they can't have a cell phone in their bedroom at 14 or 15 years of age, because in a few years they'll be at the college and they'll have a cell phone in their room at all times. And I often quote a line from the book of Proverbs, which is, if you raise up a child in the way they should go, when they are old, they will not depart from it. Now, that's a little bit optimistic, but we might restate that in view of the longitudinal cohort studies that I share in the book. if you raise up a child in the way they should go, then when they grow up and move away to college, you have significantly improved the odds. If when this kid is 14, 15, 16, 17 years of age, they did not have a cell phone in their bedroom and they were not allowed to spend 3 hours a night on Instagram, you've inculcated some good habits. And by contrast, if at 14, 15, 16, 17 years of age, this kid was allowed to have a cell phone in their room and they spend 2 hours a night on Instagram, which is now common with American
kids. And then they'll know how to live life as a fulfilled adult. Dr. Leonard Sachs is the author of The Collapse of Parenting, How We Hurt Our Kids When We Treat Them Like Grown-Ups. Thank you so much, Dr. Sachs. This is The Source on KSTX.